December 31st, 2017. Let's talk for this morning about the joy of Talmud Torah. So we're going to merge two things again. We're going to talk about Hilchot Talmud Torah because we'll be in the context of studying Torah. But at the same time, we'll talk about a personality and that of Rav Huttner, whom we discussed 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, rather. So if you look at the page in front of you, so you'll have source 1, 2, 4, and 6 are all straight from his books, Pachad Yitzhak. The other sources are somewhat related. And so to a certain extent, my objective here is to discuss in the thought of Rav Huttner, so what is this concept? Is there a concept of being joyful, and how important is it in our study of Torah? So it starts with, for me, source number one. Source number one is from his book, Pachad Yitzhak on Shavuot Ma'amar Vav. So again, just a brief introduction as to his books, if you don't remember. His books are these books here. I have two of them in front of me right here, called Pachad Yitzhak. And they're written on the topics of, and according to the yearly cycle of the holidays. So here's one on Shavuot, here's one on Hanukkah, and they're split into ma'amarim. Now, in each one of these ma'amarim, how would we translate ma'amar? I don't know. What's that? Statement. Okay, statement, but it's like an elongated statement. He basically will, in a very essay. Artistic... What? Essay. Okay, good. Essay. I like that. What's that?
Manifesto.
Manifesto. Okay, all right. I'm sorry. Almost sorry I asked. Anyway, so... what he does is he'll introduce an issue and he'll develop it in a intellectual, mystical, philosophical fashion, arriving at oftentimes, if not always, very clever and creative approaches to matters. So this first one, I think I want to say is the first one I ever read. It's what to a certain extent turned me on to Rav Huttner. Anyhow, so what he's dealing with is the following small issue, seemingly small issue, is that we discussed this at some point. The Gemara has in several places this statement, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Le'olam ya'asok adam b'torah u'misfot, afilu shelo lishma, mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. The statement is a person should involve himself, should engage in misfot and Torah, sounds like Talmud Torah, even if it's for, quote, the wrong purpose, the wrong objective. How you translate that, how you define that, is an issue that we discussed. Why should you do so? Well, there's a qualification. Shemitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. You'll come from the improper or the unpure objective to the pure objective. That's the statement in the Gemara. If you look at Harambam in Perek Gimel of Hilchot Talmud Torah, the way that Harambam copies over this halakha is he leaves out one word. He says, Le'olam ya'asok adam ba'torah shemitoch shelo lishma ba'lishma. What happened to Misvot? The statement in the Gemara said, involve yourself both with Misvot and Torah, even for the wrong intentions, because you'll come to the right one. But Harambam leaves out that word Misvot. So says Rav Huttner, he says, Gedolei Olam already asked this question. He's really referring to a book called Avnei Nezer, it seems. But in truth, this is the statement in Talmud Yerushalmi. Look in Talmud Yerushalmi as opposed to Talmud Bavli, this word misvot is left out. But the question is, why would you leave it out? Why would you leave out that word misvot? Is there something specific about Torah that even if it's shelo lishma, ba lishma, or something like that, that precludes misvot? Why is it that whereas the standard statement is Torah u'misvot, Harambam just has it as Torah. Writes Rav Huttner here in Source 1, says, V'nira'a b'zeh, de'af al-gav de'be'memra de'rabi Yehuda amar Rav nichlelu tarvayu. Tarvayu means two. Tere in Aramaic means two. Even though in the statement in the Gemara, both misvot and Torah, as he writes, are included. Komakom halukim hem be'inyanam. Argues Rav Huttner from a philosophical perspective, from an underpinning of misvot or underpinning of halakha, they are very different. And even if I make a statement and I include both of them in it, there's a different reason for each one. How so? The mitzvot, ilulei ta'amah demitoch shelo lishma ba'lishma, lo haya kan shum isur ba'asiyat ha-misvot. He says, if you're to perform a mitzvah with the wrong intention, would anyone argue it's forbidden? I mean, not would anyone. Should anyone argue it's forbidden? Forbidden? Then to work to purify your intentions. Forbidden? Nobody would argue it's forbidden. So I tell you, do it even when you have the wrong intention. I'm giving you inspiration. I'm telling you, we'll come to it being even greater. I'm telling you it's wonderful even in this circumstance. Argues Rav Huttner, it's more serious when it comes to Talmud Torah. He says, when it comes to Talmud Torah, I'm on the third line in the middle, Aval b'Talmud Torah, bevadai, di'ilule ta'amar rabba, shemitoch shelo lishma ba'lishma, haya kan isur shelimut Torah shelo lishma. He says, if I didn't have a heter, as he sees it, of mitoch shelo lishma balishma, there'd be an isur to study Torah shelo lishma. Yes.
And that is also the mitzvot tzichot kavana. That's where Rambam comes from. Also.
I understand.
So if you're doing a mitzvah that doesn't have a kavana, that means there's not lishma.
Ooh, so I think you're conflating. I think you're conflating. The kavana and lishma are separate. Again, lishma is hard to explain, but each one of the mefarshim have a different explanation. Kavana is clear. Kavana means l'shem ha-mitzvah, and that's it. I mean, that's, and he'll agree. Mitzvot tzrichot kavana.
Yeah, but in terms of the mitzvah, what is the mitzvah?
I understand. I'm just saying it's a longer conversation. I'm just, and it's more complicated because there's all sorts of opinions and there's nothing concrete on this. But they're different words for a reason. But when it comes down to it, argues Rav Hutner, he says, well, they're very different. He says, when it comes to Talmud Torah, Rambam, who's writing a halakha book, is going to tell you only by Talmud Torah this qualification, this explanation of mitoch shelo lishma balishma. Why only by Talmud Torah? Because it's only there that you would have thought that it's asur. Why would you have thought it's asur to study Torah shelo lishma? What's the problem?
Well, some same that we mentioned when it comes to, I mean, not the same reasons, but related reasons to what we said when it comes to learning Torah with non-Jews or teaching Torah to non-Jews.
Because of the dangers that it entails.
There's this element of subversive ideas, subversive thoughts, manipulation.
Which is more dangerous with Torah than a mitzvah.
On the wrong tangent, and there's a lot more of a malignant element to it, potentially.
Okay, I accept. I think it's wonderful.
It's a double-sided coin.
You're arguing David's point. In other words, the danger that it entails. Okay, and we might, when it comes down to it, you might be able to argue that what he sets forth is the same thing, and you know, just a layer behind you guys or something like that. His argument is, he says, look in Gemara Masechet Berachot, and the Gemara there talks about studying Torah kenetinata. It makes a derashah in the Torah and says the way, the fashion in which you study Torah needs to be the same way it was presented to you. And the Gemara gives examples, the same way the Torah was given with fear and awe and trepidation, ima, yira, retet, ze'a, are the words of the Gemara, so too your involvement of Torah needs to be in such a fashion. As such, says the Gemara, one opinion, which for many years was maintained, is that a person, if a man is a Baal Keri, he's not allowed to study Torah, because in that state of being, until he immerses himself in a mikveh, he's not in the proper mindset. He perforce cannot be in the proper mindset. Argues of Hutner, he says, well, when it comes to Talmud Torah, it needs to be lishma. It needs to be kinetinata. If it's not kinetinata, well, then it should be asur. Therein comes the rationale of mitoch shelo lishma balishma to tell you, even though you're not doing it kinetinata, even though you're not doing it lishma, even though you're not doing it the way the Torah was given and the way you're supposed to be studying, it's still permitted. So me as a reader of Pahad Yitzhak is left just with a little bit of a quandary. I just want to understand the difference. I think everyone's making an excellent argument. I'm going to go a little bit differently. What's the difference when it comes down to it? So the Torah needed to be the way it was given. That's his argument. Mitzvot, well, it's a little bit different. Mitzvot could have a different dimension. Mitzvot don't necessarily need to be in such a fashion. It's wonderful if they are. That's step one. Why would we separate? Secondly, once you tell me mitoch shelo lishma balishma, so that initial concept of kinetinata in its proper, in the way it was given, I mean, what's that? Did that evaporate? Do we no longer have such a concept of studying Torah as the way it was given? Or does that stay as some sort of ideal? And what I'm arguing now at the onset is that I think that what emerges from Rav Hutner is two things. First of all, is a distinction, a sharp distinction, which needs a further clarification in my mind between Torah and Mitzvot. And secondly, he leaves us with an ideal which does not need to be realized. The ideal is studying Torah constantly lishma, and if not, it's asur. But that's not the reality. The reality is we submit to human to human nature and understand that you need an easier way into it. So the Torah has a statement which isn't taking that into account initially. And so I think, I mean, just in terms of getting the ball rolling, I think this points to a concept that we've discussed in the past, and I think we'll see it just in just a moment again, and that is that Torah, things that are written in the Torah, oftentimes are multi-layered, which means to say the Torah will set forth something which is an ideal, even though it will not be realized, right? We talked about Jack has told me that it's a very mature concept, and I once taught it, and there were even college-aged kids in the crowd, and they couldn't wrap their head around such a concept. And it was the concept is there's an ideal which will not be realized. You're striving for it, but it won't be realized. You live in the real world, but you strive for that ideal, and that ideal informs the way you're going to do things, although you won't be living that ideal. So, for example, I mean, I think I read not too long ago from Rabbi Tzvi Grumet. Rabbi Tzvi Grumet makes the following observation. It's a simple observation, which everyone makes. His take on it, I think, was unique. He says that the luchot were given on two occasions. First occasion, they were given as Maaseh Elohim. They were written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were carved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was completely and fully from God. The second Luchot is P'sol Lecha. That's V'chatavti al Luchot, but it's P'sol Lecha. Moshe needed to do it. The first one he cites, as I recall, from Midrashim, it was this amazing metaphysical reality in them that they encompassed everything in the Torah. There was this divine state to them. The second ones, they were important. They were tablets, but they didn't have all those amazing Sodot HaTorah included in them. So he said, basically, you know, what changed? What was the shift? And so his argument, as I recall, was he says the first one stands as an ideal. Torah, we want to accomplish and to be able to envision and to grasp a fully divine Torah. But when it comes down to it, we have to deal with a practical and realistic world in which we live in. So why did we get it the first time? And was this all? Okay, but other questions in terms of all that sort of matter. But when it comes down to it, is you have in the Torah, in terms of the giving of the Torah, two different realities. Argues Rav Huttner now in this next letter. Now, this next letter, and it's going to really get us going in this matter. The next letter was written by a student of his who was in a summer camp. And the student describes that he's learning Torah, and he uses the words, "I'm mishta'ashe'a b'divrei Torah." What does the word shi'ashu'a mean?
Play.
To play. He says, "I'm playing in the words of Torah," which is an expression which finds its place in Mishle and in Tehillim. And Rav Huttner responds, "I love that you use that word." You know, the student just threw it in. He says, "I love that you use that word." And he explains why. He quotes a Ma'amar Chachamim in Masechet Pesachim, in which the Gemara is Doresh the Pesukim in Mishle. Right, so the Pesukim in Mishle that use this word Shi'ashua, playfulness with the Torah. And the Gemara is Doresh that these Pesukim in Mishle are referring to the Torah prior to creation. So says Rav Huttner, he says, well, what does that mean? What does it mean to have playfulness of Torah prior to creation? What is playfulness of Torah? And what does this all amount to? And so here, if you'll look at the bottom paragraph here in source 2, he says, Halecha bezeh mehirhurai behach inyana. He says, here are my thoughts on this matter. Ma wa'avdel ben pe'ula shel shi'ashu'im, it says, what's the difference between playing and work? So he says, what's the difference between the two? He says, when you play, what are your objectives? What are your goals? Forget about adult play, child play. Why are children playing? To have fun, to enjoy the moment. Why do men and women work? In order to accomplish, in order to bring back tachlis, in order to accomplish and to be able to say, I'm...
Well,
in order to play afterwards, but the act of working is not playing. Inyanim shel sha'ashuim enam nog'im lema'aseh. This is when I play a game, unless I'm gambling on it, you know, it's not no ge'an lema'aseh. Nothing's coming out of it. Nothing concrete is coming out of it. Stam pe'ula mechuvenet el hanif'al mimena v'al yadav. Ilu befe'ula shel mishak lo hadavar hanif'al. It's not what comes out of your action. Kima pe'ula be'atzma. It says the act of play is the objective, is the point of the game, of the playing, of the shi'ashua. Continues Rav Huttner. He says, well, when it comes to Torah, he says, we live in a world in which we need to fulfill the mitzvot, a world in which we need to accomplish within this world. We need to look to the Torah as, quote, a work document. We need to approach the Torah and say, well, when I'm in this circumstance, what should I do? So we study the Torah in such a fashion in which I find out, like I work, what will come out of this action, what I'm supposed to do in this circumstance. He says, but in its ideal sense, in its ideal state, quote, Kodim Biryat HaOlam. He says, Torah is fundamentally a Shi'ashua. It means the ideal study of Torah is one in which it's playfulness. What does that mean, playfulness? It means it's an involvement in the here and now, in the text, in the concepts, for no other reason other than the study, for the content. There's nothing that you're looking to accomplish down the line. So in a certain sense, what Rav Huttner has done over here is he's further distinguished, in my mind, between, and I think this really connects to our Shavuot piece that we began with, between Torah and Mitzvot. You can make such an argument when it comes to Torah that the ideal state of Torah is, quote, Torah Lishma. It would almost be asur to do it any differently. Why? Because that's the ideal study of Torah. That's what it means to study Torah. That's what it means to be involved with Torah.
So Torah Lishma is to learn Torah not for the sake of Mitzvot.
Correct. We said that already from Reb Chaim Volozhiner 2 weeks ago. It's for the sake of Torah. I mean, you're right. I'm accepting that approach in Rav Huttner. Yes.
But not in my mind an approach at all.
Right.
Correct.
It seems like the statement that almost wants, you know, the statement to reach a goal. I mean, he has a goal in mind, and
Who's he? Rav Huttner?
Yeah.
I mean, in this piece or in that piece, which one are we talking about?
In my connection? Modern, you know, way of studying Torah, like something we have never had before in history, where you study Torah just
for the sake of Torah.
He has his goal in mind. You know, he has his vision what they're doing, and he's justifying.
You're arguing it's anachronistic. That's your basic argument. You're arguing that his understandings of these matters are painted by his vision of the world. It could be. I mean,
I think it's quite old, actually. That's
I mean, it could be. I mean, I do want to remind you. I don't know how far we're going back. I mean, if you look at. Listen, there is such an argument. It's obviously not setting forth an argument that's foreign. And so the academic approach to this matter is that when you look in Gemara, this concept does not seem to be the concept of Torah Lishma in the Gemara. Not that they didn't have such an ideal, but when they talked about the word Torah Lishma, it wasn't necessarily what they were talking about. Which, okay, but Rosh already, you know, 13th century is talking about such a concept. Generally speaking, if you look in the Gemara, when they talk about this concept of Lishma, it's almost the opposite of the way we've been explaining it. Lishma seems to mean study so that you can perform. That seems to be the Gemara's perception of it. It's later commentaries and commentators who seem to have a different... That doesn't mean you won't find scatter statements where they use the word Lishma in that fashion, but by and large, that seems to be the conception. So, but all that notwithstanding, I don't know if his approach to Shi'ashua is the same thing. This is a dirasha. And the concept, the ideal, I don't think it's against Ruach HaChamim. I think it's not necessarily overtly stated by them. It doesn't mean that it runs counter to an approach that they had. Now, I'm telling you also, he is not for a second, and this is what my mother said in a second, he's not for a second giving a pro-Kolel speech over here. It will work for a Kolel, but that's not what he's doing. He's talking again about Torah, Kodem Biryat HaOlam. His understanding over here is this is an ideal state of learning. As a matter of fact, he writes to this, this is my favorite part of this letter, he writes to him at the end, he says, and what better state for you, my student, to be involved in Shi'ashua than in camp? That's what he writes. He says, in camp. He says, because camp is away from city life. It's a place and a structure in which you're not in the practical, real world stuff. And as such, what's that? Certainly. It's the best place to learn because you're detached from everything.
Also, what does it mean studying Torah? Because then, you know, for Torah, we mean the philosophy of the Torah, the understanding of, Biryat HaOlam, all this kind of thing. Naturally, they don't have a practical, I mean, they might have, but per se, they don't have a practical.
Yeah, but I think we're overdoing. I think the concept over here is, I think you're overdoing the concept of l'mod al minat la'asot. I don't know if he's as much involved with that as much as he's saying study of Torah, study of Chochmat Hashem should be pure and pristine. Now, today, he says this, it can't be and should not be pure and pristine. Why not? Because you have to fulfill mitzvot. Before we got Torah, you didn't have to perform mitzvot. And as such, in a very ironic, paradoxical sense, prior to Torah, you were closer to, if you did it right, real Torah than post. But the Torah, and that's what he says, the Hiddush of Ma'amad Har Sinai is there's a whole new spin on matters. It's that we'll keep that ideal and try to figure out where you're going to fit it in. But at the same time, what I want you to do is to make it practical and to live practically. Yes?
So, one of the things that I've heard when it comes to Torah Lishma, right, is that you shouldn't learn Torah from an intellectual standpoint like you would learn and debate Shakespeare or Newton or Plato or Aristotle, that you shouldn't take that approach to, say, learning a sugya of the Mara, right? That you should do it lishma, almost in this, like, connecting it back to a certain element of kedusha or ahavat Hashem, or, I mean, but here it seems to be that he's saying, like, you should just enjoy, you know, the sugya for the rhythm and the patterns and the themes and the back and forth and
so I mean
the
yes.
playfulness of the intellectual playfulness of the sugya.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he would deny your first statement. I think he would just say that's not your, I mean, I think he would say it's going to come, what do they say, willy nilly. It's going to come, you're going to be. It says your objective coming in is, yes, is the playfulness. And as such, I mean, I think that's the short answer to you. I don't think taking away from him and saying that he doesn't believe in Kedushat HaTorah and so forth, I think he just says when you sit down to learn Torah or think about Torah, whatever, or listen to Torah, whatever fashion, you know, you're studying Torah in today, I think his argument is in the ideal sense, it's away from any practical considerations. Now, again, that's... He's not telling you that you're constantly going to be studying ideally. Torah is filled with 613 mitzvot. I mean, that's what it is. So there's no such thing as that pure ideal Torah any longer. But the concept remains. Again, I mean, we've talked about this concept several times, this interplay of ideal and real, but that's what he's really developing. Now, importantly is, again, the theme, the topic of the class today is the joy of Talmud Torah. So we already are kind of easing our way into it by understanding that Rav Huttner's mindset in terms of proper, appropriate, ideal study of Torah is playfulness. Now, playfulness, we're all aware, engenders happiness and joy. That's when you're involved in that moment and not have no other considerations, that's the most pleasurable and joyful time to involve yourself. So we already, in terms of him developing and opening us to his thought on what it means to study Torah, to the distinction between Mitzvot and Torah, to the understanding of Shi'ashua, he's opening us up to what will quickly develop into a focus on the enjoyment in the study of Torah. But before that, I just wanted to return to something. I think I mentioned this once in this class or in another class. So there's this book, you know, I don't even know if they publish it any longer. God, he got in a lot of trouble for it. This is my father's rabbi. His name is Rabbi Soloveitchik. So there's this book. It was written by one of his students, David Halter. David Halter lived in Boston for a long time. I think he lives in Florida now. I'm not sure exactly. Lives in Israel now, maybe, or is his brother. I don't know, but regardless. So he wrote this book called The Rav Thinking Aloud. They called Rabbi Soloveitchik The Rav, as we discussed within the past. And so the reason it was controversial is because what he did was, he had permission during Rabbi Soloveitchik's lifetime, and he was involved because he lived in Boston, both Rabbi Soloveitchik and David Halter. And David Halter's father, I think his name was Manny Halter, was very involved in Jewish activism and education and so forth. So he had real access to Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he would record their conversations. And Rabbi Soloveitchik gave him full permission to do so. To publish them, I don't know that Rabbi Soloveitchik ever envisioned that happening. Although, you know, I guess we all have to imagine that that's going to happen at some point or another, if. But anyhow, so here in this book, so he has all sorts of interesting and thought-provoking statements and, you know, things that you're not going to find in published books from Rabbi Soloveitchik, even by his greatest students. But among them, and it's just, you know, I always enjoyed this because of, well, I'll tell you why in just a second. He's talking about his grandfather, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, right? It's on the sheet here in source 3. I'm just going to read it from the book, but I'll read from here and I'll read you the footnote from the book. So he says, Rabbi Chaim, his grandfather, Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandfather, was a well-known, world-renowned Talmid Chacham. He opened the school of thought known as the Brisker Analysis, and his books and his concepts and his teachings are taught around the world from Sephardic to Ashkenazic. From Ashkenazic to Sephardic yeshivot, Hasidic. His way of thinking, his approach is really dominated to a certain extent. So he says, Reb Chaim learned Kodashim. Kodashim is the study of Korbanot, Zevachim, Menachot, and all that sort of stuff. Brisk is well known for learning, though. You know, he was the one who introduced Kodashim into the Batei Torah. But to Reb Chaim, a good Hidush in Torah and Kodashim, if I may say so, perhaps I shouldn't say it. So now, you know, as a student of someone, and you have their recording. And in the recording, the person says, maybe I shouldn't say what I'm about to say. You publish it? Okay, anyway. He says, but a good Hiddush in Torah was more important than the whole Beit HaMikdash in his intuitive way. So he just made the statement of, for his grandfather, it was more important to learn Torah than to have the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, it's footnote 234 in the book. Obviously, the Rav is speaking Derech Kuzma, it's an exaggeration, just to express the concept. Okay, he continues. He says, but Rav Chaim was mehadeh b'misvot. He certainly followed all the misvot, and he did them behidur. He was scrupulous with them. Sukkah, lulav, and etrog. But the Torah about lulav, the Torah about, it should say, etrog, and sukkah, was more important than the misvah. Footnote 235. Obviously, the Rav felt that even though Rav Chaim understood en hamidrash ha'ikar el ha'maaseh, nevertheless, when you saw the intensity, involvement, and excitement, involvement, okay, and so forth. That was a very apologetic footnote over here. The reason I'm drawing this forth, what I think Rabbi Soloveitchik meant about his grandfather in this instance was that for his grandfather, the real thing was the study of Torah. That was the objective. And it was his grandfather was able to, yes, perform, but quote unquote, in a very paradoxical sense, that was the unideal side of matters. He loved the Hiddush in the pure and pristine and genuine Divrei Torah for what it was, for the study of Torah. Because Torah in and of itself is a Shi'ashua, is something that has no other objectives. We live in this world and we have 613 Misot to perform. And as such, quote unquote, the unideal side of the Torah, the part that we need to grapple with, the part that we need to be involved with as well, is Kiyum HaMitzvot. So I'm not apologetic about this statement at all. And it sounds funny initially when I say he didn't care about Mitzvot, he cared about Torah. But when you understand what he actually meant in this, I think
he cared about Mitzvot.
I know, yeah, you know. He cared about Mitzvot and he cared about Torah, but the concept being that in terms of his perspective, in terms of his approach to these matters, he understood that the ideal in this ironic sense is the study specifically. Yes?
I'm just thinking, but at the end of the day, you know, now I'm thinking, you know, when you perform the Mitzvot the Lulav, what is your final intent anyway? It's to, you know, to grab something. You know, it's not just to shake the Lulav. It's to get to an understanding of the of something. So it's a kind of
Cycle.
If you do it the right way, it should get you back to the...
Maybe, but obviously, let's go back to a concept you mentioned earlier, right? Misvot srichot kavana. Misvot srichot kavana just means you need to know you're doing the misvah. There's no mandate to know the philosophical underpinnings. You don't need to know the tame misvah.
I'm going one step.
You're saying in ideal sense, I know it with the misvot as well. Fantastic. But the misvot already was a mechanism to come to understanding in your world. Whereas Torah should be, or could be, you know, in this ideal sense, the mechanism, the vehicle in and of itself, without the involvement of anything else. Because the second you get involved with something else, so there's already another dimension which in turn you're hoping will loop you back around. The concept of Chochmat Hashem, of Torah, in its ideal sense is, accomplish it all there without.
Doesn't seem like the
practical. It's not practical.
No, but doesn't seem the message of the Torah. The message of the Torah seems to be you're not able to understand the full Torah unless you perform its fault.
And but Abi, that I'm with you. That
you
returns.
To understand.
I'm with you.
That changes in you, like in your way to understand the world, to relate to the world, and as an effect, you will understand the Torah.
I gotcha, but here's my question. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, right? So they had a connection to God. They had a connectedness to God even without 613 mitzvot. Can we agree on that? Mm-hmm. So the concept is that you could attain and should, to a certain extent, in an ideal sense, be able to attain it even without the mitzvot. You're right. We can't. And that's why we have these mitzvot. And that's why our study of Torah perforce needs to include the mitzvot.
Right, but by the same token, they didn't have a Torah either. So you don't need mitzvot or Torah to make that connection. If we're going to use Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as
When I say Torah, I mean Chochmat Hashem. Whatever their connection was, that's what I'm talking about of Torah, Kodem, Maaseh Bereshit as well. Same concept in my mind. Okay, I mean, so that brings us forward. That propels us into this source 4, and in turn 5 and 6, where Rav Huttner directly talks about the enjoyment of Torah and the joyful approach to it. So he says, "Hachidush," here in source 4, and this is in Hanukkah Marvav, says, "Hachidush Hashem asinu be'inyano shel tamu Torah, ki le'olam yilmad adam ma shelibo hafetz." He starts by citing a Gemara Masechet Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, specifically by Talmud Torah, you're supposed to study that which draws your heart, that which you're interested in. When it comes to other mitzvot, which one of these sick people do I want to visit? Well, you could decide based on whom you think you'll be more. But when it comes down to it, that's not the determination of the mitzvah. The halakha is not choose whom you like better or who you'll do better with. The halakha is visit sick people. When it comes to Torah, the halakha is, the statement of the Chachamim is, study that which is most appealing to you, that which you'll enjoy the most. So says Rav Huttner, why so? What's the difference? Halo pashutu ki en mekuma shel achra'a zu ela b'limud Torah. It's only by study. Asher bo ha'itaskut b'makom shelibo hafetz hu achra'ato shel hadin asmo. It says the definition of this mitzvah is studying that which you'll enjoy. So how does he explain this? Hasbarat ha'devarim. He says the explanation to this right. Ki kol shayachuto shel adam im mesiyut shechutzalo. He says any time we interact with realities outside of ourselves, harehi bederech shel chibur, there must be some intermediary. How so? Hachushim, our senses, po'alim et po'olatam bederech chibur. It says our senses work through intermediaries. Chush hamishush, touching, po'al et po'olato yedi chibur b'kocha shel negia. We touch by feeling. Guf adavar, nogeahu beguf adam. I touch the table and the table's touching me. Chush harashut, Po'el hu et pu'ulato al yidei ha'chibur el kocham shel. This should not say rashut. This should say hush ha'shmi'a. No, what? Hare'ot. I'm sorry. Hush hare'ot, a sight. Po'el et pu'ulato al yidei ha'chibur el kocham shel kave'or. He says, how do we see? With light waves. He says, how do we hear? With sound waves. So how do we think? Right, so his argument is those brain waves are driven by enjoyment. So he writes here, he says, "I efshar lasechel lavo leklal hasaga." He says, our minds cannot come to comprehension, ki im al yidei chibur im inyano shel hamusag, unless we connect to the matter which we want to comprehend. So I want to comprehend something, how am I going to connect to it? When I want to touch something, I do it like that. When I want to hear something, I need to lock into the sound waves. When I see something, I need to lock into the light waves. So when I want to understand something, what do I lock into? The concept, the intellect. How do you lock into that? Chibur zeh shel hasechel im inyano shel hamusag na'asahu bekocho shel ha'ta'anug ha'tamun
b'hasaga. It shouldn't be the opposite. The endorphins need to be activated. You need to learn the concept, and then the endorphins come in to enjoy. It's not the opposite. You don't enjoy first, and then learn the concept.
Are you going to be, his argument is, that the only way you'll appropriately comprehend it is through enjoyment.
When you learn Yav Torah, the Hidush makes you enjoy. It's not the enjoyment comes first.
I think it's the process.
No, the process.
But how did you? But how did you make your way through that process? How did you attain? How did you attain the concept at the end? Not through ta'anug, but not through.
Your endorphins are clicking in as you're learning it.
They're activated through the learning, but they're not pre-active. Before the learning.
But I don't know if it's before. It's through the process, I think, is his argument. Do you need to get into the process? Once you're in the process, this is his argument. The only way you'll grasp it is through involvement.
State of ta'anug. That's the way I'm reading it.
But state of ta'anug, because his argument is that's the way you'll grasp it, not the way you'll endeavor. His argument, I mean, this is how I understand it, that to get the musag, lasigetzeh, is through enjoyment. I mean, he'll make it sharper in the next piece that we'll read of his, but that's how I know it's the next piece of his. He'll specifically focus on remembering what you studied. He says, remembering what you studied, one of the vehicles to it is specifically enjoyment. So I don't know if he's talking about the full process, you're right, but I think he's saying when you're successful in this process, it's only with an enjoyment. Yes?
Also, through sufferance, can be like any strong emotion, it doesn't have to be enjoyment.
Right, point taken. That's an interesting point. No, as he says, we remember things sometimes because we were pained by it.
But you can't continue studying something. I mean, not that you can't.
But in that moment, when you studied it because you had a loss of a something, and so you studied in the moment, or you comprehended something in that moment, it's oftentimes something that you'll comprehend better because you were down, because of the circumstances and so forth. It's not only enjoyment. You're right, you're not going to go back to it necessarily.
But this is still continual, right?
This is even in the moment. I'm not only talking about, he's talking about how do you comprehend something? How do you...
I thought we said that you study,
Yeah, you study for the purpose of the learning. That's his basic argument. Now, what does that mean, to study for the purpose of learning? What does it mean to be involved just with the knowledge? That's a moment in which I'm playing. And a moment in which I'm playing, my development over here, is a moment of enjoyment. So obvious arguments,
but then endeavor is the piece that you start first, like to his point, and then when you grasp it and understand the beauty of it, that's the enjoyment.
Okay, so that's what I'll talk about. You're right, I misstated it, I imagine. His argument over here is the endeavor, or at least the beginning stages of the endeavor, are not driven by that ta'anu. Maybe they're driven by a longing. He says, but the chibur shel asechli
nimerah shel musag. Chibur is to be attached to
the musag. He says to the concept. Okay. Good. I'm glad you set me straight on that. I know. Glad you set me straight on that. I know. It's the same thing with touch. I didn't touch it because I'm going to feel it. Once I felt it, that was the accomplishment of it. I didn't open my eyes I know. It's not the preliminary stages to that matter. Interesting point, Avi. More than anything, yes, I think you're right in terms. Yes.
The psychologist in the room would be able to explain it different. When you have a sad experience over the course of shechicha, forgetting, you always remember the good things. So things that come, that are learned out of ta'anuk, are longer lasting than suffering. That's how I use that. Isn't that correct?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
I would disagree with that, actually.
I don't know if that's too psychological, but certainly not for me.
You ever see that commercial when they talk about how they see their lives, their people always positive, when they want to invest in something?
Okay.
They always look at positively where they're going to be in 5 to 10 years. Or when you're learning something, you always remember those things. The bad is always less.
It suggests that you always remember the positive. Right. People who are optimistic and remember the positive are more successful. But I don't know.
If it's driven. I mean, listen, maybe...
People on losses.
I mean, listen, to a certain extent, I'll suggest this, and I don't, maybe I'm overdoing in this context the word ta'anug. Maybe ta'anug isn't happiness. Maybe it's not even joyfulness. Maybe ta'anug is a certain comfort. Maybe ta'anug is a little broader than I'm suggesting, than coming out with a happy feeling as opposed to a feeling. Maybe even the word,
But you're still putting a positive spin on it.
I am.
Perhaps it's the rabbi that was like really strict, made you sit down, and he said, you're gonna learn this sugya, you're gonna know it inside out, I'm gonna test you. Do you form a connection? Do you remember that in any way differently than the joyful, rabbi that made the whole thing?
Right, so did you have emotions in that circumstance? No. You just repeated it a lot of times.
No, you did. You had anger. Frustration.
Okay, and that would be a medium to it as well. I don't either.
But you wouldn't go back on your own and continue studying.
But in the moment.
We're
talking about the comprehension.
I'm stuck on the...
I like it. You're talking about the inspiration. He's talking about... But the argument he's making is that you won't get it if you don't have what's called ta'anug. And the argument is, it's about, we remember traumatic experiences, even, or we even comprehend during traumatic experience. Interesting point. I mean, he concludes by, of course, pointing to the berachot that we make. What's that?
We'll make a new yeshiva just around.
We'll make a torturous yeshiva around torturous learning. Wonderful. I mean, listen, there are... I will tell you... There are several statements in Divrei Chachamim in which they talk about the Torah shelamadati be'oni and Torah shelamadati be'tzar, and there is this concept of yisurin bringing people to new heights in their understanding of matters. So I think it's certainly true in Divrei Chachamim. Why he's not developing like that?
He's talking about the ideal, like you said. Shabbat, this oneg Shabbat.
Right.
What's the oneg? The tahnuk. It's that elevated state. Mm-hmm. So it goes back to what you said.
It'll be an ideal in that respect. Okay, in terms of how you... He concludes and he says, you know, the truth is the beracha of Talmud Torah, which we don't have by others. I mean, this is the words of inspiration. Usually, that's the way it's used. He's doing it in the philosophical context. He says, we say v'ha'arevna Adonai Eloheinu divrei Torah techa b'finum fiyot amecha b'et Yisrael, and so forth. What is v'ha'arevna? Arev means something that I'm enjoying. Arev means something I'm drawn to. He says, we only have that by Torah. We don't have it by other concepts. Why so? Of course, because Torah is this playfulness. Torah is this concept which you'll only connect to through joy. Now, Rav Huttner, truth be told, in this piece, and it needs to be examined further, he draws a distinction between Divrei Torah and Divrei Chokhmah in general. From a psychological perspective, it's a difficult sell. In other words, if we're talking about intellect, we're talking about intellect. I just want to be intellectually honest with you to tell you that's what he does over there. Just in terms of a short analysis or description of what he did over here. So Dr. Yaakov Ellman, who's a professor in Yeshiva University, so he has this article, which some of you may have read, others not. I sent it in the email a few weeks ago. So he has in this article that he wrote, he's analyzing these words, and again, the name of his article is Pahad Yitzhak, A Joyful Song of Affirmation. And so he cited what we just read from the Hanukkah piece. This is a remarkable analysis on several grounds. First, Rav Huttner assigns pleasure a role in the workings of the premier mitzvah, and moreover, right, so that's the first and foremost, he compares the role of desire and pleasure in Torah learning to the working of the senses, and thus understands that desire as a natural outgrowth of the pleasure to be attained in the course of Torah study. You know, so the pleasure is supposed to be a natural outgrowth, it's supposed to be like the senses. In this, he also maybe emphasizes the role of human autonomy within the domain of Talmud Torah. He says he's to a certain extent hinting toward the concept of you're supposed to be creative in the study of Torah. It's supposed to be playful. It's supposed to be enjoyable because you're supposed to be making your own attainments. But perhaps most remarkable of all is the fact that the pleasure here is viewed positively. Indeed, the joy of intellectual discovery is the very essence of Talmud Torah. Without it, one has not fulfilled the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Now, it might, to most of the people, to everyone in the room, that might be simple. Of course, supposed to enjoy the study of Torah. Now, what Ellman is pointing out over here is this has not always been a simple concept. You know, there have been those yeshivot that were built around agony and sorrow and the study of Torah in that fashion. I mean, most notably, there were these two schools of thought in Europe. There were two Musar approaches. There was the Musar approach of Slabodka and the Musar approach of Navardik. Rav Huttner emanated from, he came from the school of thought of Slabodka. His first rabbi was Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, the altar of Slabodka. He learned in Slabodka Yeshiva. That was the joyful approach to matters. That was Gadlut Adam, looking at our greatness and studying and comprehending based on that. The other school of thought was Navardik. Navardik, what they would do, I mean, this... Until 15, 20 years ago, there were people that could tell you that they did this. You know, they used to go into stores and just, embarrass themselves publicly. I forgot the stories. They're just wild stories. This was mainstream people. This was a movement. The way we're going to connect is by looking how little we are, by beating ourselves up, by getting lashes. Lashes outside of Navardik, they did it as well. But what I'm saying is they would make themselves, bring themselves to ashamed states of being. So again, right, Elman, this is very appropriate for Rav Huttner, born and bred in Slabodka. It does. I'll give you that much. The question is, source-wise, everyone has their, and in terms of attainment-wise, you have all sorts of... Okay, so yes?
Again, as a distinction between Rav Cook and Rav Huttner, Rav Cook would say that spirit or that spark of of loving to learn and the intellectual pursuit and everything like that, you should have it in a lot of different ways, and including Talmud Torah. And Rav Huttner has like the black hat dead end, where he like caps it only in Talmud Torah.
I did think the same thing as well. We would have to read that whole piece in Hanukkah Ma'amar Vav carefully to see exactly why he distinguishes, but it was something that went through my mind as I reviewed it early this morning as well, in terms of, he is closing off something, and why is he not, especially, keep in mind what we discussed in past 2 weeks ago with this double life issue, in which he says it's not a double life, but at the same time he's saying the enjoyment, you'll have to, it sounds like you're correct, the question is how that fits his general philosophy. I don't think, this is my understanding, I don't think he's doing this from a political perspective just to be, you know, in your words, a black hat. I think he's doing this because he believes this. Question is why he believes this if he has that broader perspective.
Does he ever express a view of Talmud Torah as a more broad set of knowledge in a Rambam type of way?
So we'd have to go through this one, Pachad Yitzchak and Shavuot, not that I know of. He's very into distinguishing. And you're right, I'd have to get to the bottom of it. And to be continued maybe. I don't have it fully formulated. In terms of capping this off and just a little bit more in terms of this joyful side of Torah, of study of Torah, here, look at source 6, this is Pachad Yitzchak and Shavuot in Ma'amar Lamed. He writes, Mipi ha-nisayon yode'im anu. And so I was taught as a from a pedagogical standpoint, you're supposed to start off this way. You're supposed to try to appeal to the people by saying to them, you know, we all know this based on experience. Well, that's what he's doing. He says, based on our own experience, now, just to be noted, each one of these pieces are all in the middle of segments. This is not his whole piece. I'm picking up in the middle here. It says, we know from experience, ki asarat shiltona shel hashichecha benogea le'eze inyan, he says, based on experience, we know that we forget and the ability to remember is in one of two ways. Now, let me just tell you what the background to this is. He notices that in Kiryat Shema, the way that Torah is described is in two separate ways. In Ve'ahavta, in the first parasha of Kriyat Shema, so the Pesukim say, Ve'hayu ha-devarim ha-ele ha-shanachim yitzavachayom al-bech. Ve'hayu means they should be. In the second paragraph, in Vayayim Shamo, it says, V'samtem et devaray, samtem et devaray, yela al-vavchem. Whereas in the first one, it refers to it just being placed. In the second one, it refers to it being placed. So this is why different verbs describing how to study Torah. Again, one being, it should be. The second one being, well, place it upon yourself. And so his argument, in short, and he's zoned in this piece, on memory of Torah, on what you come out with, he says, well, there are two ways to remember something. He says, the first way to remember something is just by repeating it, by studying it again and again and again. It might not relate to you, you might have no enjoyment in it, but by rote, by just repeating it again and again, you're probably ultimately going to come to know it. Will it last long term? I don't know, sometimes yes. This is the other way to remember something is instantaneously, because you're connected to it, because you have an enjoyment, because you feel a connection to it. In turn, argues Rav Huttner, he says, when it comes to Talmud Torah, he says, the first parasha in Kriyat Shema, which starts with that word, ve'ahavta, and ahava in his mind following Harambam on this matter, is through ta'anug, is through constant involvement with it. He says, well, ve'hayu ha-devarim ha'ele refers to Talmud Torah just being something that you enjoy, that you're connected to, that you recall and remember because it was something that you felt connected to because you enjoyed doing so. V'samtim, in the second parasha of Kriyat Shema, says, well, listen, sometimes that's not going to work. And sometimes you're not going to be able to. That might be the ideal. It might be, certainly it's the easier way to remember matters. But if it doesn't work that way, you're still commanded to repeat it. But in short, I mean, I'll read it here in the second paragraph. He says, ve'adayin ha'chech me'mashmesh mizeh. It's a little poetic. He says, our palate is still touching these matters. U'motzet mizeh od tuv tam v'dat. And we're almost sucking a little bit more of an understanding. B'shimush musag ha'havaya, right? V'hayu ha'devarim. He says, using the word ha'vaya, v'hayu ha'devarim, in order to talk about not forgetting, Hashare pashutu ubarur. Shekol ha'amakat ha'kelita shel divrei Torah. It says the depth of imbibing the words of Torah. Tekef b'sha'ari shona shel knisat ha'davarim l'toch ha'kara. It says immediately, once the words enter your consciousness, enana aset something. Mitoch ribui ela, it should say, mitoch ribui hata'anug. It's done specifically. How would you instantly remember, recall, grasp it? Ta'anug, enjoyment. Again, obvious comment notwithstanding. Asher hanefesh mit'aneget al arivutam u'tikutam shel divrei Torah. It says from the enjoyment in the playful act of involving yourself in Torah, that will connect you to it. Shelefi godel midat ha'oneg kacha be'erech ze hi hagdalat omek ha'kelita. He says, commensurate to your enjoyment, that will be your lasting grasp of the matter. To summarize the words of Rav Huttner, we began, and we're talking the topic of the joy of Talmud Torah. We began in this piece in Shavuot, in which he distinguishes between Torah and Mitzvot. Torah, in an ideal sense, it would be asur to study shelo lishma. Mitzvot, well, you know, it's not asur. It's nice to learn at lishma. Why is that? So I think it was a great and maybe better argument made than the one I made in terms of the danger of Torah as opposed to Mitzvot. Alternatively, what we suggested is this ideal sense of Torah is one in which it's a shi'ashua, is one in which this is all-encompassing in the study. Well, we live in a world in which it's not ideal, that we don't live in an ideal world. True. But the ideal sense of Torah still stands. The concept of shi'ashua in Divrei Torah, when it can be attained, should be attained. So we ask, so what does that engender? What does it mean to have that shi'ashua b'divrei Torah? Well, what I suggested is that brings us to the next step, and that's the enjoyment in the study of the Torah. And that's what Rav Huttner points out in Hanukkah, in his Ma'amar Vav in Hanukkah, in which he talks about the way to connect to the Torah, and the way in which a person grasps it is similar to the senses. You know, you need to have that chibur, you need to have that medium. And the medium, whereas within the senses, it might be a light wave or a sound wave or something else. This is when it comes to knowledge, in his understanding of it, it's some sort of sensual connection through the sense of, or not sense, but through the feeling of ta'anug. I mean, it's an interesting interplay over here, by the way, between emotions and intellect, which is a big debate among psychologists today, of can you distinguish between the two? I mean, he's clearly merging the two. He's clearly saying that your intellectual capacity is dependent upon, and Talmud Torah, by its definition, must be involved with this ta'anug, or with some sort of sensation at the same time. And we concluded here in Pahad Yitzhak in his Shavuot, Ma'amar Lamed, in which he talks about v'hayu ha-devarim ha'ele, and suggests v'hayu, havaya, the concept of Torah just being there in you. Well, he says the only way to attain that is through true ta'anug. Otherwise, yeah, you can get it by rote, but you want vehayu, you want that ideal sense, well, the connection with the ta'anug immediately is the way to do it. In short, Rav Huttner is not quiet at all when discussing this concept of the joy of Talmud Torah. He stresses it, he repeats it, he develops it, but to him, the concept of joyfulness in Talmud Torah stands at the bedrock of its study. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.